Saturday with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. My panel today, Martin Hayden, Minister of State, Eoghan O'Riordan of the Labour Party, and Sinn Féin's Mairead Farrell. Now, take a listen to this.
Attention, attention. This is a police message. The crowd should disperse immediately, as force is about to be used against violent individuals. If you do not stop, impact rounds will be fired.
Now, that's from Thursday night in Belfast. And again, last night, there were more disturbances in the Tiger Bay area. Alison Morris is crime correspondent with the Belfast Telegraph, and she joins us now. Alison, can you tell us what happened last night?
Last night, there was actually sectarian clashes between gangs of youth at the North Queen Street interface. That would be quite an infamous sort of interface that joins the Republican New Lodge area with the Loyalist Tigers Bay area. In the past, that's been probably one of the most volatile flashpoints in Belfast. But in recent years, it's managed to be fairly peaceful and there's been a lot of community work done. But last night, it took obviously a massive step backwards and there was ongoing clashes between youth. There's a car set on fire and police again, riot police were once again called out to the scene.
And who is behind this, do we think, in terms of the orchestration? Because we know there was another statement from the PSNI yesterday seemed to be pulling back from earlier suggestions that there was more orchestration behind it.
The reasons behind it are fairly complex and you know, they're fairly wide-reaching given, you know, what the state of loyalism at the minute and the unrest among unionism. But, I mean, there was clearly orchestration in some of those riots. We had riots in McNabbie, which were being organised by the South East Antrim UDA. They're basically a sort of faction of the Loyalist paramilitary group that's more or less a criminal cartel at this stage, heavily involved in drug dealing. There was a number of arrests made up there quite recently, and there was part of what was going on with the backlash to that. In other areas, there is social media accounts that have been popping up over the last week or two that are advertising these protests at interface flashpoints. There's a suggestion of who might be behind those, but it's clearly someone with a sinister motive trying to attract crowds of young people. Once you get crowds of young people at those interfaces, and you know, it's actually the 23rd anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement today, but yet still we have, you know, huge peace walls, huge security gates dividing the two communities, and if you attract large crowds of youth to those, it becomes very difficult to try and control what's going on. So there is definitely some paramilitary involvement in the background. And then there's an element of this is now just spreading and turning into something that young people, I suppose we use that awful phrase, recreational rioting. Young people are being attracted to these situations and moving from one area to another area. In West Belfast on Thursday night, residents literally held each other's hands and formed a human shield across the front of the peace line to prevent young people coming near to start a riot. And so they simply moved location last night then to a different interface. To go into the sort of complexities of that, but, you know, there's poverty, there's mental health problems, drug abuse, high rates of suicide in young men. I mean, there's complex social reasons why many of those housing estates are still subject to this kind of activity.
I'm not hearing the Northern Ireland Protocol or the Bobby Storey funeral in that list of reasons behind this.
We know that the protocol has been angering unionists for some time. Before lockdown started, unionists were holding and loyalists were holding a series of, I suppose, what you'd call town hall meetings, these huge Boris betrayal meetings to discuss the impact of the sea border. That's been simmering for some time and could possibly have been brought out onto the street sooner had it not been for the pandemic. And then the decision in relation to the Bobby Storey funeral, what we had there, you know, the fact, I think, that what happened was political unionism as a bloc, as in all of the political parties, called for the resignation of the chief constable. So they diverted any, you know, blame that might have existed or public anger for the fact that a large funeral had taken place during the restrictions away from the people who were at the funeral and towards the chief constable and the PSNI. And there was lots of talk of two-tier policing and, you know, the policing was favouring nationalist communities, which is all a perception. I mean, there's nothing and you know, there's no evidence to show that's a reality. And in the minds of those very young disaffected youths, people who are disengaged in many ways from society, that sort of, I think, made them believe that there was justification and for attacking the PSNI. They almost became legitimate targets. And in that case, we've had over 70 police officers have been injured in the space of a week, which is remarkable given, you know, that we've had such a period of peace and enjoyed such a period of peace in Northern Ireland at all those interfaces moving during the summer marching season. and all of a sudden it feels like we've taken a massive jump backwards.
Okay, will you stay with us, Alison? I just want to open this out to our panel here. Mairead Farrell, I mean, it's a terrible indictment of the state of affairs in Northern Ireland that there are young people on both sides of the divide feeling so disconnected, so disenfranchised. And Sinn Féin have been in government in Northern Ireland for some time now.
Katie, I think what we've seen over the last number of weeks, and that is the whipping up of tensions. And I think Alison really hit the nail on the head that there's so much and there's a myriad of issues. But what we're seeing here now is that these illegal protests were organised by crime gangs in loyalist areas, and that must stop. But not only were these organised, these were organised crucially at interfaces. And for those people who aren't aware of what these interfaces are, I think it's really important that people understand what these are. These are peace walls between communities. Now, what is the outcome going to be of having these illegal protests at these interfaces? I mean, on Wednesday night we saw petrol bombs being thrown over at the Lanark Way and over onto the Springfield Road. And then, yes, on Thursday night, we did see nationalist youths come out as well. Now, what is very important here, and I was only speaking to Paul Maskey, Sinn Féin's MP for West Belfast this morning in relation to that, is that Sinn Féin representatives, as well as community groups, youth workers and local residents were very much out in force throughout the week, speaking to any youths that were a congregation. Yeah. And what as Alison said there, was that there was a line made at the peace wall, and that is crucial, and those youths were then moved on further up the Springfield Road away from that area.
That is the immediate issue in terms of leadership and
but we do dealing need
with
to
it on the ground.
Leadership.
But the point that I think Alison would make, or that anyone analysing the situation would make, is that this has fallen on very fertile ground, because there is such feelings of disenfranchisement and disconnection, and of being left behind in these loyalist communities in
absolutely.
Particular.
Yes, absolutely. And that's been a failure.
Sinn Féin has been in government for this length of time in
Northern
Ireland.
We have seen a complete lack of leadership from political unionism over the last number of weeks. I mean, in January we saw that Arlene Foster said...
What has Sinn Féin done for these loyalist communities?
Well, what we have been doing and what nationalist communities have been doing is consistently engaging in cross community work, and we've seen it even with football clubs, and we've seen statements from local football clubs. We saw one from the Shankill football club, as well as one on the other side, appealing to people to not get involved, and young people not to get involved in this kind of thing. But what is absolutely key here is that we need leadership from loyalism and from unionism to call stop on this, and to stop this whipping up of tensions. I mean, we saw in the last number of weeks the LCC wrote to the British Prime Minister saying that they no longer support the Good Friday Agreement. I mean, what is going to be the outcome of that? But holding these illegal protests at interfaces is only going to cause mayhem, and then it's going to be able to be blamed on a sectarian tit for tat.
Martin Hayden.
Yeah, look, Katie, it's essential that there's calm, measured and positive leadership, and that it's exercised at every level for all the people of Northern Ireland. And when I hear the comments of Minister for Justice in Northern Ireland, Naomi Long, and the comments she made in Stormont during the week, and that resonated very much with me. You know, our government here will play its part fully in that. Minister Simon Coveney had a lengthy conversation last night with Secretary of State Brandon Lewis. There are democratic and legal means to address everyone's concern here, whether it's in relation to policing in Northern Ireland, whether it's in relation to Brexit or other matters. There's no justification for the violence.
Have we taken our eye off the ball here, though? Because I heard Bertie Ahern this week saying that there hadn't been a British-Irish intergovernmental conference in relation to these issues for a number of years now. I mean...
No, I don't believe so. Like, you know, the Taoiseach had a lengthy conversation with Boris Johnson on Thursday. We have the North-South Council, the Ministerial Council that has been meeting. Look, there are loads of challenges here, and Brexit definitely has added a layer of complexity to the challenges here, and we hear that in some of the comments from people in the North. But what we need is that calm space now to be able to work through these issues and to de-escalate what's here, and there's a responsibility for that on all sides, for that de-escalation.
Eoghan O'Riordan.
Well, I think there's two things here. I mean, from my interactions with communities in the north, what has been said to me is that there's a generation of young people who listen to tales of the troubles, who, you know, have people in their community who went through that. Maybe they spent some time in prison. They see the, you know, the murals on the walls and the songs and all the rest of it, and they feel like they missed out. And they want to have the level of respect that maybe older people in their community have because of what they have been through in the 80s and 90s. So there's that element to it. But the second element to it is you know, what is so striking, be it a nationalist area or be it a loyalist area in terms of working class Belfast, is that they have the same social issues that they have to deal with in terms of educational disadvantage, issues with addiction, suicide was mentioned, youth unemployment, you know, literacy issues. And unfortunately, what's been handed to these young people is a flag. And these are the things you need to be energised about, is a flag. Now, you can't eat a flag. So I think if we spent an awful lot more time talking about housing, educational disadvantage, empowerment, employment, you know, all these issues that actually unite both sides, and not to be obsessed with this identity politics as much, then we might get somewhere. And also, I think we need to be careful. Look, I have as aspirations for United Ireland as much as anybody have. And it's a completely legitimate aspiration. But I think when we speak about this and speak about border polls in the south, it's very comfortable for us in the south to talk about border polls when there's a million people in the north who are very, very, you know, uneasy about that prospect. And we now have a whole generation of young people who need no very little excuse to do what they've done over the last number of days.
Okay, let me just, before we leave this,
I want to agree with Martin, and I believe Mairead as well. Calm and calm rhetoric is what's going to help in this period of time.
Just on that last point, the rhetoric around a border poll that has grown, and those ads that appeared in the American newspapers there in the run-up to St. Patrick's Day, talking about when Ireland will be free, the first time we'd have a free land. Like, is that helpful when you see where we are today?
I think very clearly, first of all, what I would definitely say and what I've just said is that I think this violence is as a result of the whipping up of tension. What I would say is, and something from what Aegon said there is, I mean, he's talking about, I would fundamentally disagree that people see murals and hear songs and want, you know, that was a very, very difficult time. And many people and many families, like my own family, have suffered greatly as a result. So, and I want to bring about, like, I mean, one thing that we really need to talk about here is the Good Friday Agreement. I mean, we did have a situation where people came together and agreed the Good Friday Agreement. Now, the whole concept of a unity referendum is within the Good Friday Agreement. It is very clear here.
It says it is
for the people of Ireland alone by agreement between the two parts respectively and without external impediment to exercise their right of self-determination. Okay. Now, what I would say is, in terms of what Aegon said, in terms of, you know, people can't eat a flag, and in relation to identity, I mean, obviously, clearly, the Good Friday Agreement also deals with the whole issue of identity, and that it is important that people can identify as British, they can identify as Irish or whatever they wish to identify. So I think that's very important, but we cannot forget the Good Friday Agreement and how important the Good Friday Agreement is, and we cannot undermine that document.
Okay, we're going to have to leave that there. Alison Morris, many thanks for joining us with that update, and there we take a break.